Well, if you've listened to the news lately, you've heard about the terrible economy. You've heard about high unemployment. You've heard about people who are really having a lot of difficulties. And it can be depressing to listen to that. So I have this note of encouragement to you. If you are depressed about the state of the economy, visit any of the theme parks in Orlando, Florida, and you will realize very quickly that the economy is not in the bad shape that people are saying. Those parks have thousands of visitors daily. People who are there clamoring to get on rides, to see shows, to buy 50-cent hamburgers at $6. You watch all of this and you realize that the economy is in very good shape. My family and I over spring break had the opportunity to visit one of these parks. And as we were there, I was struck by some rather different thoughts. I'm always good for one ride on a roller coaster. When my children want to ride the fourth, fifth, and sixth times, I sit and wait on them. And there were times when I was sitting there and just kind of people watching. And there would be people come along who spoke with different accents, people who spoke in different languages. And I thought that in many ways that park, the day or the days that we were there, was somewhat like a microcosm of the world. Different people, different nationalities, each person with his own hopes, his own dreams, his own heartaches, his own family, his own excitements. And in a lot of ways, it was a group of people who you could tell were trying to make their way through a world that they didn't particularly understand. As I watch people go by, whether it be those with tattooings all over their body, or people who had almost every imaginable visible part of their body pierced, everybody seeking a diversion, everybody looking for a way to make it through this world. And the thoughts just kind of struck me that with each of these people, here is a soul that will one day stand before the Lord. For every one of those people gathered in that small area, here is someone who will give an answer to the Lord. Which brought me to another question in my thoughts. And that is, what is my place in this world? When I look at all of these people, when I think about all of the different situations, when I think that at my time on this earth, however long it's going to be, I'm going to share this planet with billions of other people, what is my responsibility in helping souls to be right with God? This evening, I want us to think about this idea. You are not going to hear anything brilliant. You're not going to hear anything new and exciting and different and fresh. But a simple reminder that each of us has a responsibility. That each of us as Christians should look at our place in the world and we should determine that yes, there is a place for me. And the fact is that the Lord has work for me to do. And as we approach this topic this evening, I want to look at it in basically three different ways because I think there's three different areas where we see that we may be placed in positions where we can help others in finding the Lord. And I want us to examine those and then to see where we stand in our relationship with God, in our relationship with the other inhabitants of this world. As we consider this idea, I want us to think first of all with just the idea that I've kind of entitled Going Global. And to understand this point, let's start at the beginning of Christianity. We understand that when Christ came to the earth, it was by His own choice that He was bringing Christianity in a seemingly small way. In fact, the Lord Himself addressed that as He delivered a parable in Matthew 13, verses 31 and 32. He said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his field." So as the Lord here is dealing with what He's planning on doing, as the Lord is dealing here with the idea of what He's bringing in, He draws the illustration that what I'm doing appears to be very, very small. After all, he was apparently, in the eyes of everyone else, one man. And this one man choosing only 12 men to help him in spreading this gospel message. But yet we continue with that passage and we see that what the Lord said was coming in a small way would have very major results. Because he goes on to say, but when it is grown, it is larger than all the garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds of the air come and make nest in it. He said what appears to be very small and in the eyes of many perhaps somewhat inconsequential will grow into something that everybody will be able to see. And as we look at the unfolding of the New Testament, we find that very clearly. And as the Lord brought this message, and as this message began to grow, He said to those men who He had chosen, I want you to be instrumental in spreading this message. As He chose these apostles, and as He spent time with them in preparation, getting them ready for this work, He said, I want you to understand your role in carrying the mustard seed into the plant, the work that the Lord has called on you to do. And to them, as well as to all of His disciples, He said, I want you to realize the opportunity that's there before you. John chapter 4 and verse 35, the Lord is quoted here where He says, there are yet 4 months, then comes the harvest. Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the fields are white for harvest. You see, those men were also sharing the planet with a whole lot of other folks. And the Lord said, I just want you to look out. And I want you to realize the opportunities. And I want you to realize the challenges that are there. Because the harvest is ready. And as those apostles heard the message, all except for one chose to take the Lord's words to heart. And as the Lord is bringing His time on this earth to end, Matthew 28, we know quite well, where He says, and Jesus said to them, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you, and behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. The Lord said to His apostles, I want you to go global. I want you to take this message to where I direct you, wherever that might be. And so for these original apostles and those that were chosen at a later time, including the apostle Paul, they did just that. They took the gospel message, they complied with the Lord's commands, and throughout the New Testament, we read about them going. We look at the book of Acts. And we see that while we are not told everything that's happening there, we are told a great deal of that message being taken into the world. But it wasn't the apostles only who took that message. You see, we also find that others did. Acts 16 and verse 1 tells us about Timothy and Paul asking Timothy to go, choosing him to go. We turn and we read about Silas and we read about Barnabas and we read about all of these other folks who went into the world to preach the gospel. And that's been going on ever since. Right until the very time that we're present on this earth, there are still those who are following that example today. Those who will go for 2 or 3 months, those who will go for 2 or 3 weeks, those who will make a lifetime of it. They're taking the gospel message to the world. And for you and I would say to us that they need our support. Those men and their families who have taken this as an opportunity, as a challenge for themselves to go and to carry this message, they need our prayers. They need our financial support. They need our emotional support. And I tell you, it does my heart good to see the work that this congregation does. Though I've only been here for a relatively short period of time, it's been very obvious to me that world evangelism, that going global, is a very major part of the work of this church. And while there has been a very long history of it, it is my hope there's a very bright future in it as well. that as those opportunities arise, that you and I look to our own personal resources, and where we have ability, where we can sacrifice, we do so to make sure that that work is continued. You see, the Lord said at the beginning to take that message, and I'm glad to say there are many who are doing that today. But certainly that's not the only way that the gospel message is preached. I want us to think just briefly about another, which we might just call prevailing situations. You see, there are times when there are some folks who have no real plans to go global. They have no real plans to dedicate their life to the preaching of the gospel in some foreign location, some different location than their home. But because of life situations, that opportunity arises. Because something happens, they have the opportunity to preach the gospel. If you will, look with me over to the book of Acts chapter 8. And I think we see one such situation here. In Acts chapter 8, we're told almost in a passing, matter-of-fact way about an entire group of people that fit into this situation. As we end chapter 7, we know that Stephen has just been stoned to death for his beliefs. He stood up, he's made a sermon. They did not like his sermon, and he's killed for it. And we see where it says Saul approved of his execution. But then I want us to pick up where it says, "And there arose on that day a great persecution against the church in Jerusalem. And they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. Devout men buried Stephen and made great lamentation over him. But Saul was ravaging the church, and entering house after house, he dragged off men and women and committed them to prison." Now I want us to note in particular verse 4. "Now those who were scattered went about preaching the word." You ever thought much about that passage? If you're not careful in the book of Acts, you tend to say, we're going to study the big stuff. Peter's sermon, Paul's journeys. But here, housed in this chapter, in a very short verse, we find about those who were preaching the gospel. Those who were scattered, who went about preaching the word. You see, it was their circumstance, not their choice, that produced the opportunity. It was their choice, however, to go and to make this a good situation. You ever thought about these people? Here are people whose very lives are threatened. Here are people who may very well face the axeman for the beliefs that they're holding. At the very least, they've been kicked out of their homes. They've been sent to other locations. But it's almost like when you're trying to stamp out a fire. You ever been burning something in the yard and it's getting a little bit bigger than you intend for it to? So you take your shoe or you take your hoe and you start trying to punch that fire down. And what happens? The sparks just kind of shatter, don't they? They're hitting other leaves and they're hitting other dry places. And before too long, where you had one fire, now you got all these little fires scattered about. That's just exactly what was going on here. Here were our brethren. Here were Christians who were so intense on their beliefs that no matter the situation, no matter what kind of place they were going to be in, they were dedicating themselves to preaching and teaching the Word of Christ. What about us? It may not be for persecutions that those things happen to us, but it may very well be that life itself places us in situations where we can teach. May not be the idea of going into all the world. We may not have any idea in our mind that we're going to become men and women who go into other areas and to preach the gospel. That's not really what we're looking at. But because of situations that arise in our lives, we have that opportunity. And it may very well be that a new job or some other circumstance puts us in a place that we never thought we would be. Here we are in a situation that we never ever pictured ourselves in. And it may very well be that if we're outside of this area, we are in a place where the gospel message has not been preached very much, and where there are very few Christians who are there. What should be our attitude in these situations? Well, I would suggest to us that just like these first century Christians, if we find ourselves with that particular situation, we make the most of it. But as we consider that, I want us to understand that with these people, they were ready. They were prepared. And so must we. Right now, none of us knows where we'll be in an hour, much less a month, much less a year from now. And it may very well be that as the calendar clicks off, a year from now we find ourselves in extremely different circumstances. What if we are the person, we are the people who are in that new situation, who are in that place where the gospel has not been preached very much? What do we need to be doing now? Well, our knowledge needs to be ready. The idea that I'm going to go into an area where the gospel is not strong, by the own circumstance of that, means I must be strong. If I'm going into an area where there's not 200 or 300 other Christians that I meet with each Sunday, where in the general vicinity there are thousands of Christians who are living, but only a small band of disciples, I've got to be ready for that. My knowledge level must be where if I am in that situation, I don't fall away. And my fervency must be there as well, that I don't look at this as some kind of curse. I don't look at this as some kind of bad situation. I look at it from the standpoint that here is a place that God has put me. And in doing that, I must be strong enough to take that opportunity. You see, these situations are risky. Someone who's really wanting a job may say, well, I'll go into that area. I'll do what I need to do, when the strength and the fervency and the knowledge may be very, very low. That's a dangerous situation to place oneself in. However, if I have been preparing myself, then I am ready no matter my circumstance to go. Then I can do the teaching and the preaching just as those Christians in the first century. Basically, it boils down to the idea that I come to the understanding that no matter where I may be on the face of the earth, I'm equally as close to heaven. Whether it be in Madison, Alabama, whether it be anywhere else, I'm no further away from heaven. And in that, I'm going to do the work that the Lord has given me to do. That's a way that many have found opportunities to preach the gospel. But this evening, I believe thus far I've addressed the least two likely ways. Really, when we think about our role in world evangelism, it's just simply looking for the opportunities that God provides for us wherever we are. The vast majority of our teaching opportunities are going to be in everyday life situations. You see, back in Matthew 28, when the Lord said, go into all the world and preach the gospel, He was talking to His apostles. He was not giving a general command for every Christian that wherever we're born, we've got to leave that area, we've got to go. Although it's a good thing for people to do in following the example that the apostles set, it's not something that's going to be equally applicable to everyone. And there may be those who never live in an area where there aren't a lot of Christians. And that's okay. The Lord is not looking down on anyone who is living in an area where there are lots of people who are following Him. But if I find myself in this situation, then I understand that it's my responsibility to take that gospel message to whomever I can, with whomever I come into contact in my daily walks. I want us to understand that to take advantage of this, we've got to appreciate what we have. If you will, look back with me to the Old Testament for just a minute. Back to the book of 2 Kings chapter 7. 2 Kings chapter 7. Kind of an unusual account here in the days of Elisha, where there is a great famine that's occurred because the city has been surrounded. They've been under siege. And we have this interesting account of some men with leprosy who are starving. And they're going to make the best of their situation. Let's look in verse 3 of 2 Kings 7. It says, "Now there were four men who were lepers at the entrance to the gate. And they said to one another, 'Why are we sitting here until we die? If we say, let us enter the city, the famine is in the city, and we shall die there. And if we sit here, we die also. So now come, let us go over to the camp of the Syrians. If they spare our lives, we shall live. And if they kill us, we shall but die.'" It's the idea of, we can go, we'll look for the best. If it doesn't occur, we're going to die anyway. No big loss. Well, let's see what happens here in the rest of the account. Verse 5. "So they arose at twilight to go to the camp of the Syrians. But when they came to the edge of the camp of the Syrians, behold, there was no one there. For the Lord had made the army of the Syrians hear the sound of chariots and of horses, the sound of a great army. So that they said to one another, 'Behold, the king of Israel has hired against us the kings of the Hittites and the kings of Egypt to come against us.' So they fled away in the twilight and abandoned their tents, their horses, their donkeys, leaving the camp as it was, and fled for their lives." Now look at what the lepers do, verse 8. "And when those lepers came to the edge of the camp, they went into a tent and ate and drank, and they carried off silver and gold and clothing and went and hid them. And they came back and entered another tent and carried things off from it and went and hid them." Now I want you to think about this. They're about starved to death. And all of a sudden, here is this completely stocked camp full of food, full of treasure, full of clothing. And you can just kind of imagine them. They're grabbing everything in sight and they're taking it and they're hiding it and they're coming back with the second wheelbarrow to get some more. And one's conscience strikes. Verse 9. "They said to one another, 'We are not doing right. This day is a day of good news. If we are silent and wait until the morning light, punishment will overtake us. Now therefore come, let us go and tell the king's household.'" It's so interesting to me to look at the parallels between Elisha and our Lord. Similar things. And in this account that's housed within a section telling us about Elisha, we find these lepers saying, "This is the day of good news." And what does the word gospel mean? We have found the good news. You and I have that. We understand it. It's interesting, this past week at the lunch table, our topic kind of got off on evangelism. We started talking about that. And one of the ladies was talking about the place where her husband works. And talking about how he takes opportunity as he can to teach others, to try to spread the gospel as he can. I don't particularly agree with the terminology that's coming up, but please understand that I'm just quoting as one of his co-workers said. As they were talking about religion and churches and such, he made this statement: "If the people in the Church of Christ really think they're the only ones going to heaven, why are they not out there trying to teach everyone what they believe?" That kind of socks you in the gut, doesn't it? He had a very denominational view of the church, obviously. His attitude about our teachings, I think, is a little misconstrued there. But nonetheless, the point remains. If you and I have the good news, and we're not sharing it with others, I think the same conscience problem that plagued those lepers should be plaguing us as well. What we're doing is not right. And as we consider all of the opportunities that we have, we must take advantage. You see, we don't fall under a command to go into all of the world. God has never said to us, you must pick up your household and leave and move somewhere else. But what He has said is this: you have a duty to love your neighbor. You remember the situation there in Luke 10? The man comes to Jesus, "Lord, what's the greatest command? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. And the second unto it is to love your neighbor as yourself." And the man, seeking to justify himself, said, "Who is my neighbor?" And the Lord said a man was going, and you remember, on the road. And the robbers attacked and left him for dead. It says, and a Levite came by and walked on the other side. And a priest came by and walked on the other side, leaving the man there to die. The Samaritan came by, took care of him, took him to the inn, was doctor to him, left money for him. And he said, which was the man's neighbor? The answer is pretty obvious. It's interesting to me that in that parable, the two that passed by on the other side were those who were religious people. Those who were considered to be the examples in the day. Was the Lord telling us a message? That sometimes we can get so busy, so caught up in various aspects of, quote, religion, that we miss the opportunities that are laying on the road in front of us. And for that, we must be ready. As the Lord provides those opportunities, you and I must seize those opportunities. And that means we've got to examine ourselves. I tell you, I have not ever been in a congregation, I believe, that devotes itself more to concern for the souls of the lost than this one. And I don't say that to pat anyone on the back, but I say it to encourage us. Because I think all of us, from time to time, no matter how good a job is done, we see the need for improvement. I think all of us at times will say, I am just not taking those opportunities. And kind of like on that road, we look back and we see who we've passed by without helping. But yet we look at that, and it requires us to say, then I am going to keep in constant remembrance the number of people in need of the Lord's message. Though I share this planet with billions of other people, I know I can't help everyone, but I can help someone. And that will be greatly aided when I understand and remember what the Lord has done for me. As I think about the kindness and the patience and the mercy that God has had in providing me a way of escape, certainly I want others to have that as well. In just a few minutes, we're going to hear people about people in a very different location who are having that opportunity. And as we listen to that report, let's remember that there are those even in our own area, within stone's throw of this building, who are in as much need, and that may be somewhere where I can take advantage of the situation. Let's make sure that as those opportunities arise, we're going to take advantage of them. Maybe this evening, you're one of those who's in need of that opportunity. The Lord's message has been presented to you, and you understand that. You understand that baptism is for forgiveness of sins, or you understand the need to come back to the Lord. Today is your day of good news. The Lord has provided one more opportunity for you to get your life right with Him.